Why is too light not good? And what do you mean by too light?
Yeah, so anybody can look like a hero with an empty bar. You know, there's not a lot of feedback to our nervous system, to our brain, right? There's no, the external resistance is like a map for us. You know, to, if it's not enough, then we don't have to do the right things at the right time in order to be successful.
Welcome, Sean, to Evidence Strong Show. It's my pleasure to have you. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Hey, Droux. My name is Sean Waxman. I'm an international coach with USA Weightlifting. Been involved in the sport for 30th year. I was an athlete. I think my first meet was like 91 or 92. I don't even remember back that far. And I started as an athlete, but I got into the sport wanting to coach, not necessarily weightlifting, but strength and conditioning. And I went to weightlifting so I can learn how to do all the lifts with precision and really have a visceral understanding of what these lifts, not only how to do them, but how they feel and how they change your homeostasis and going through that process, that developmental process. I was really curious. So I can then better use that information to help make my athletes better. But I actually got pretty good at weightlifting pretty quickly. And I kind of fell in love with it as a sport and competed full time. I molded my whole life around training and competing for 9 years. And was it fair or good? I don't know. One of those two. I never made an international team, came very close a couple of times, and started coaching strength conditioning and my first 13 years. And then in 2007, I switched focus to just coaching weightlifting. And I did that full time for 13 years until 2020. And then I closed, I had a big training facility for weightlifting in Los Angeles. And I closed it during the pandemic. I needed to escape from LA. I couldn't take it anymore. And I moved out to Utah and got back into strength and conditioning. I'm still coaching weightlifting. And along the way, I went to grad school for biomechanics, weightlifting, and so I've been a student as well as a practitioner and a coach. So I've kind of worn all the hats, so to speak.
Awesome. That is, man, that's a long time.
A long time.
Okay, so the plan for today is to talk about programming for beginners versus advanced athletes. You are experienced, no doubt about it. So I'm pretty excited to pick up your brain on the topic of programming. I think it would be good to start with golden rules. So what are the golden rules for programming for Sean Waxman?
So I think that depending upon where you're at in the journey, I think there's certain rules that are the same, certain rules that are slightly different. Regardless of where you're at in the goal is to develop as close to perfect movement as the body and the brain will allow. And how you do that is going to differ based on multiple factors, right? The talent being the most important one. You know, the talented athlete can overcome bad coaching a lot better than an athlete that isn't talented. Doesn't mean that the less talented athlete can't achieve high level. It's just, you know, it really, that's where good coaching will come in. So I think, you know, the ability to teach rational technique is the most important thing. And then it's how do you, in the era of drug testing, you know, how do you develop athletes and continue their progress, you know, past that four or five years without drugs and without killing. So I think that, I don't know if those are rules, but those are really the most important elements of developing, you know, really any athlete, but we're talking about weightlifting. So, you know, I think that, you know, you got to keep athletes training. You know, the most important training day is the next day. So the decisions that you make on any given day shouldn't negatively affect the next training day. It doesn't mean that they're not going to be beat up or sore or whatever, but it can't be to the point where they have to alter their training significantly. So I guess paying attention and the most important training day is the next day. Those are my two rules and I'm sticking by it.
All right. So let's say we go through, let's start with a young athlete, 15-year-old boy coming to your gym, good athlete in general, I don't know, playing football a little bit and running pretty fast, and he looks good. He's excited about learning weightlifting. How would you program for him?
Yeah. So assume assuming they come with, they can hit all the positions, right? They can overhead squat, they can front squat, they can press, they can, so that all the ending and the starting positions are good. So we don't have to worry about that. So we'll make that assumption.
Okay.
If not, that has to be the priority. They have to have a place to they have to be able to start correctly, and they have to be able to finish position correctly. So assuming that's good, then, you know, then the main priority for teaching beginners, because they come to you being inconsistent, right? They make different mistakes, different times. So the primary goal is to get them consistently inconsistent, right? Let's get them to the point where they're making the same mistakes. The goal of the training is to teach technique. That's it. Teach technique and develop general strength. Not so much, the strength component can't be so much that it affects the dynamic of the lift, the speed and the coordination of the lift. So you have to balance the two. But the primary goal, and this is the goal for the first 3 to 5 years, is to teach the technique to where it's unconscious. You know, the programming is basic. Like, it doesn't need to be anything fancy with beginners. That approach stays until they become consistent. If they're talented, that will happen around 4 to 6 years. And at this point, the technique is unconscious. And the focus and the errors they make early on are errors of poor concept. Like, they don't know, they just don't know the technique yet. As they master the technique, the mistakes come from weakness. So as you peel back the layers of the onion, as you get stronger, as you snatch a clean and jerk more, different mistakes will happen, not because they don't have concept, because there's a weakness. So the training focus becomes now finding the weakness, strengthening the weakness, so the total improve. Then when the total improves, there's going to be another week. Then you have to, so the programming is always moving in focus. But the skill that the younger athletes are trying to develop is consistency at any weight, right? So you see inconsistencies through all the intensity ranges in the beginning athletes. So when those inconsistencies start to go away, then you know they're starting to pass over into the next developmental phase. With advanced athletes, those mistakes don't start to occur until above 92 or 93%, generally speaking. Then they're just tired, or it's heavy, or something's weak. But up until that point, every lift, the same. 60%, 70%, the same. 80%, the same. 90%, the same. 92, 93, now we start getting in, you know. So early on, it's teaching technique. Later on, it's finding the weakness and strengthening the weakness once technique is unconscious.
So how often would you ask the young athlete to come and train specifically weightlifting with you?
Depends on the age. So, you know, this depends on biological age, right? Not so much chronological age. So biological age, you know, when they're very young, pre-puberty, right around puberty, you still want them doing other things. So weightlifting is a part of the bigger picture. And a lot of it's just technique. So you want them doing gymnastics and jumping and running and all these other things, and learning how to snatch and clean and now, if they're 15, like you had mentioned, 15, 16 years old, now you got to make a decision. So when they're younger, I want them training every day something. When they're older, I want them primarily doing weightlifting. I think 4 to 6 days a week, depending upon their attention span. But that also includes other things. So within the weightlifting day, there's jumps, there's sprints, you know, there's handstand walks, there's, you know, different athletic movements built into to the training, you know, when they're post puberty or right around, you know, finishing puberty, when their attention span is good. When they're young, you have to plan on 20 to 30 minutes of technical training at the most. Then they're going to be climbing the wall. So with the cognitive ability to focus is a big trigger for how much weightlifting training they can do. Because if they can't focus, then the technique, then they're going to make technical errors, and you can't, like, you have to correct those right away when they're young, because whatever they do all the time is what they're going to do when they're not thinking about it in competition. So every lift needs to be, it's like building a spinning clay, you know, you put your nail in the wrong place and it throws the whole thing off, right? So you have to be very careful about how you mold them. I don't let my athletes miss very often. If they miss, it's not because I don't want them to build the habit of missing. So whatever the habit they develop in training, especially with my young athletes. So it's not like I travel-go light. I just pay attention to put them in situations to succeed. And I also introduce failure as a lesson, and we learn from it, like as a lesson to be learned. And failure is good if you're controlling it. So if the only thing they know when they touch the bar, and the only thing they expect is success, then that's going to catch. Then when they're in the white light moment on the competition stage, and they're not thinking about all the things, they're thinking about making the lift. The only thing they have to draw from is success. In training, it's about perfection, as close to it as you can come. And when they're not there, you have to get them back there, which means you're taking the weight down, taking it up. I mean, too light is no good either, right? So you know, it's cultivating.
Why is too light not good? And what do you mean by too light?
Yeah, so anybody can look like a hero with an empty bar. You know, there's not a lot of feedback to our nervous system, to our brain, right? There's no, the external resistance is like a map for us. You know, if it's not enough, then we don't have to do the right things at the right time in order to be successful. When it's too much, it alters the dynamic of the lift. It slows it down. The coordination is off, and that's not good either. So you have to really have to watch that. You know, is it the right weight? Well, are they consistent? Now they can be consistent with too light. So it can't be just are they consistent. I guess it's in the eye of the coach. Like you do this long enough, you can see that they're struggling just enough. I know, like if they're talking in between, like if they're just all chatty and in between sets, it's probably not heavy enough. You know, it's just, it's one of the, it's not the indicator, but like the way the bar moves, the way they move, you know, do they have to struggle? Struggle doesn't have to mean sloppy. It just means struggle. Do they have to focus? You know, do they perceive it as hard? If they perceive it as hard, that's great. And if they perceive it as hard and they're still able to be consistent, then that's the right weight. So with young athletes, I try to pick weights that they're able to be consistent with for about 20 minutes to a half hour for an exercise, because you probably have an hour and a half of training, 2 to 3 exercises, major exercises, and then your supplemental work, which they can be tired at that point. But if you're teaching, they have to be fresh.
Okay, so could you go through the session? If you have this lifter coming on, how would you structure the session?
Yeah, you know, I've taken a couple of different approaches. You know, generally, we'll get to work on 2 technical elements, maybe, you know, snatch and clean, or snatch and jerk, or clean and jerk early on, right? So I think two of the technical elements, and then, you know, the strength stuff, it depends. Are they strong already? You know, I was really strong at 15. So if I went into weightlifting, I wouldn't have needed a ton of strength work, but I think it depends, but nervous system isn't as important as you get to the 40 to the 60 minute mark of a training session, right? But in the beginning, you're going to do the most challenging things. Generally, it's going to be a snatch related exercise first, if that's what you're doing. You know, I've done both snatch and clean and jerk in the same session. Sometimes it's a snatch focus session. Sometimes it's a clean and jerk focus session. I think it depends on the athlete, so it's front loaded with technical work. The middle is strength, and the back part is remedial. So whatever remediation exercises you want to use. And for me, I think with women, with girls, there has to be a huge focus on upper body training. It's generally going to be, they're just weaker in the upper body coming in. Now, the good news with girls and women is that they can handle more volume than boys and men. So a lot of the remedial work with women is going to be upper body work, pulling and pressing. And doesn't mean that boys don't need it too. It's just, I think also for protection, girls need a little bit more work on, you know, around the elbows and the wrists, and just anatomically, they're different. And a lot of variety. I'll do split lifts. I'll do just, you know, lifts from different heights or different starting positions, or, you know, just a lot of inputs for them to sort through. And I think that you also will see where they need, like if they have a problem in a particular position, you know, that's information that you need to pay attention to. Because, you know, why are they weaker there? You know, why are their ratios off? Why are they back squatting so much and they can't clean and jerk? right? Or, you know, why are they, you know, so you can, you start, as they train, you'll see, you know, you'll see these relationships appear.
How you would treat a novice athlete, but who is older, let's say university level athlete, they did something before, maybe for the girl, it was gymnastics, for the boy, it was, I don't know, American football. Where do you get your athletes from most often?
My best athlete, she came from hockey and CrossFit. I saw her at a CrossFit competition. I immediately reached out to her. And I did that for my two best female athletes. Actually, I saw the one at the CrossFit competition, and I saw another one. I saw a video of her squatting. But the way her body type and the way the bar interacted with her and her athleticism, I reached out to her. I said, look, you got to be weightlifting. I'm pretty good at identifying talent in that way. And my best male athlete who I have now, he comes from track and field. He was a 100 meter. My best female athlete now, well, she's an interesting story. Kat, she started in judo, pole vault, and rowing. And then she came to weightlifting for me. And now she's on the national team for short track cycling.
Wow.
So she transitioned to short track cycling. If I could have my perfect athlete, will come from either, and for different reasons, either gymnastics, diving, or pole vault. I like those three sports for different reasons for choosing out.
Okay, so you spotted your athlete, they are keen to come. How would you start them?
So, you know, I think injury history has a lot to do with where their entry point is into the sport. You know, that's always, especially if they've been at a high level in any sport, really, and they're an adult at this point, they're in their 20s, they're going to bring some problems, physical problems with them. So, you know, I think you have to, and I would take this approach with any athlete, but especially with them, is, you know, you have to really figure out what their capacity for training, you know, before they break. So I think that to establish where your boundaries are as far as how much volume they can handle in total and in the clean and jerk and in the squats, because those are the clean and jerk is the thing that's going to beat you up the most. Now, you could snatch all day, it's not going to beat you up. Not like the clean and jerk will. You know, and I'm a big fan, I'm a big believer in minimum effective dose, right? So yeah, but by finding somebody's capacity, then you can figure out what the minimum effective dose is. You're not going to have to do more. This is where, you know, I start to, with older athletes, I like using velocity measurements on squatting, because I don't want to give them any more squatting than they have to have. So I think you can really give them exact, you know, once, I think that at that level, speed of the bar, especially in the squatting, is more important than anything else. You can get stronger at a lower intensity if you move that intensity, you move that bar faster at the same intensity. So if I can keep them between 85 and 95% on the squat and just keep on moving those weights faster, I know they're getting stronger and I'm not beating them up so much. So I think that really managing fatigue and stress in those athletes is really important, because they're more fragile, because they don't have the years of developing the connective tissue in the way that weightlifters need it. It's not that they're weak. I mean, you get somebody from America, you know, play college football, American football. I mean, they're no joke. They're an elite athlete, but weightlifting is different. You know, the things that we ask the body to do require, you know, in order to make those changes, you know, to change the connective tissue, to change the quality of the muscle and how it attaches to all that stuff, it just takes time. You know, you can't rush that. And the hard part is you're dealing with a shortened career, right? You come at 24. I came into the sport at 22, but I played football. I was beat up. But you don't have 10 years. You know, you might have 6 or 7 if you're lucky. So how do you fit it all in? So you have to be a little bit more aggressive at the start.
So would you say, to summarize, that with young athletes, novices, the most important is developing technique and observing them and manipulating variables just to get them right. And with the older athletes and novices also, the most important is paying attention to their capacity and to not get them injured.
And finding their best technique, because it's not going to be perfect.
Right.
You don't have the time to cultivate that perfection. So I think that you have to have a different concept of what perfect is. And yeah, it has to be a technique that's efficient enough and safe. So I think instead of trying to reach for perfection like you do with younger athletes, you reach for good enough and safe. And then you just go. If they're good, if they're not good athletes, then you can take your time. It doesn't matter. But if you have somebody, hey, I just came from playing football and I want to go to the Olympics in 4 years, it's a different problem to solve than, hey, I'm 15 years old, you know, I want to go to the Olympics in 10 years, right? That's a very different problem to solve. And it's much more risky. It's a much more risky journey the later you get into the sport and the more talented you are, because the more talented you are, the higher your output is. The faster you are, the more powerful you are. So if you have, like, if your positions are off, you know, you can have this crazy output, I mean, you can hurt yourself. You know, when you stink and you're slow and not powerful, it's almost impossible to hurt yourself like that because you don't have enough output. So those are some of the big differences as I see it.
Okay, we talked a little bit about intensity, volume. Any comments on exercise selection, young athlete versus older athlete, both beginners?
Yeah, I think that, so for young athletes, I think variety all the time, large variety of exercises. As you get better, I think the pool of exercises that you choose from, the variety is less per training session. Doesn't mean you don't use those exercises. You might rotate them in, but you know, as you get better, the focus has to be more on the snatch and the clean and jerk. Now, I don't believe in the old school, you know, Bulgarian style, just snatch, clean and jerk, you know, front squat. And I don't think that that's a reasonable approach, but you know, at some point, if lifting heavy weights is a skill, then you have to practice the skill. You know, getting better at your power clean is only going to, or your clean from the blocks is only going to have a certain level of effect. At some point, you have to snatch, clean, and jerk heavy and as often as you can. Now with my older athletes, I do a lot of supplemental movements like for the blocks. I use a lot of block exercises because I find that I can train the back heavy, like deadlifting and things like that, and train the lifts heavy from the block because it gives the back a break. So I think that with younger athletes, I don't worry about that, right? Because they're not lifting enough in anything to cause tremendous amounts of fatigue. So I guess the short answer is a lot of variety all the time with young athletes and less variety, more intensity with the older athletes. Bodybuilding is throughout the whole career. Do a lot of bodybuilding with my young athletes, and I do a lot of bodybuilding with my old athlete. I think it's a vital component to weightlifting training.
Let's go into advanced athletes and how the training will change now when we are 6 years into training and you have an athlete that came to you or have been developed by you 6 years in, let's say, international level. What do you
think? Yeah. So you know, we talked about that unidirectional approach, you know, of specific focuses on specific days so you can maintain a higher average intensity, I think is the general design of the programming. I think that, you know, managing stress or paying attention to stress and making changes in training based on what you're seeing. Obviously, your eyes are going to be the best thing, but, you know, there might be some breadcrumbs before you see the problem. So I think paying attention to that with those advanced athletes, I think they're going to do more snatch and clean and jerk. I think that that's, you know, that's one of the big differences. They're going to be doing more snatch and clean and jerk. I think that the back squat needs to drive the clean and jerk. And what I mean by that is I think that if the back squat is under 120% or so of the clean and jerk, you have to be very careful about how much clean and jerk you give them, because they don't have the reserve strength to deal with a ton of heavy clean and jerk. So I think that when you're looking to improve the clean and jerk, I think you first have to start with an improvement in the squat, just as a protection mechanism. Because if they're operating at a lower percentage of their maximum ability, then they can handle more volume. So I think improvements in leg strength first, and then bring the clean and jerk up. I think that's an approach for an advanced athlete. I think it's a way to keep them healthier and to be able to do heavier clean and jerks more often. I think it's one of the big differences when you're dealing with, you know, with an elite level athlete. The advanced athletes is figuring out what to push, when to push it. That's
how do you decide?
That's a great question. I think it depends on the athlete, what the athlete needs. You know, I know some, I know for me, I needed a big squat in order to clean and jerk. I trained with a couple of guys that were really good, that every time they did they had a PR in the clean and jerk, it was a PR front squat. So, I mean, I can't even imagine what that feels like. So our training is going to be different. If I have two athletes that are like that, then I'm not, my guy that every time he has a clean and jerk PR, it's a PR front squat, he's going to need early in the training year, he's going to need a lot more leg focused training. You know, if I got a guy that's a 200 kilo clean and jerker and he's back squatting 300 kilos, I mean, how much, you know, there's a problem there. It's not strength. So how do I get his clean and jerk up knowing that I don't need the strength stimulus? So there's no one answer to that question. It really depends on where you feel the best allocation of stress is going to be to improve the total. Like, what's the problem?
Okay. And how do you balance it with the schedule of competition, qualifying competition for big events? Because this is a factor you have to factor in too, right?
Especially now. So, you know, the first 18 months, you know, if you're talking about somebody that's trying to qualify for an Olympic team, you know, the first 18 months of the training year are like every other, you know, that we had before. But the last 18 months, you know, they might need to compete every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Which is why the traditional linear periodization doesn't work for that demographic anymore. Because you can't have this big deload. Because then if you have to re-compete in 6 or 8 weeks and you're out of shape because of this big deload, you don't have enough time to get into shape for the next competition. So that's why I went to these short block of training, 4 to 6 week complete block. So in the first 18 months for an elite level athlete, they're going to compete generally at world. Their two major competitions are going to be Worlds and our Continental Championship. The secondary competition will be Nationals. So depending upon where, so generally in the U.S., Nationals is in the summer, but so is Continental Championship. So sometimes the National Championships are the last qualifier for the Continental Championships. So generally the elite level athletes will compete in the first 18 months, maybe 2 or 3 times a year at the most for peaking competition.
Okay, so you covered first 18 months now.
Yeah, so first 18 months, you know, it's going to be Worlds and Continental Championships, National Championships. The next 18 months, it depends, right? Like depending upon what qualification procedures they're going to come out with. So, you know, you have to be ready to figure out how to, you know, be very strategic in which meets you go in and actually peak and compete for, which ones you go in just to weigh in, you know, so you have to really take all that into consideration. You know, with this, you know, with that Grand Prix that we had, that final qualifier, it was one of the best competitions I had ever seen. But, you know, because you had, you know, in some classes, you had 4 Olympic champions in one class because of the change in weight classes. That's tough because they had to throw it all on the line. And then, you know, in 120 days later, they have to go compete at the Olympic. I mean, that's a hard, especially the bigger athlete, it's a hard thing to do. So you have to take all that into consideration. You know, if you're fortunate enough as a coach to have an athlete that's in that position, you know, you can't screw it up, you know, by putting him in the wrong competitions or having him cut weight when they didn't have to cut weight or whatever. There's a lot of variables that go into that last 18 months leading up to the Olympics. So you have to make wise choices.
Any other things the coaches should take into account when coaching or programming for advanced athletes? I don't know, in technique, volume, intensity, exercise selection. So you said more focus on clean and jerk and snatch. So that would be exercise selection, less variability within a session.
Yeah.
Or within a programming, would you narrow down your exercises?
Yeah. I mean, especially, you know, with my high level people, you know, we're snatching. Clean and jerking, we're power snatch, power clean and jerking, we're push jerking, we're doing snatch clean from the boxes, some snatch clean from the hang. It's not as big of a part of my program.
Why you don't use hangs with your advanced settings that much?
I just don't, it's not as prevalent. I think it helps with some specific problems. If your athlete doesn't have them, then I don't know, you know, I don't know if how much you need of it. I do a lot of heavy deadlifting, pulling, snatching, clean, deadlifting. I don't do a lot of extensions and things like that. I do some. I just think from a mechanical standpoint, I think it's different. I think if you want to strengthen those muscles, I think there's other ways to do it without introducing pattern that might differ a little bit. So, but I do, the heavy deadlifting is not a technical exercise, right? It's a strengthening exercise. So I don't really care about the technical part of it as much. So lift from the boxes, hang, power, back squat, front squat. I like Hatfield squats a lot. They're with the safety squat bar holding on to a bar in front of you. I mean, you can do upwards of about 150% of your back squat. I think without putting the same kind of stress on your back, and you can load the torso. For me, it's like it's a torso builder to have that much weight, you know, on your back. I do a lot of hyperextension, RDLs. I'm not a big Good Morning fan for my elite athletes. Why? And then
just a different pattern. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, it's a great exercise. Don't get me wrong. I just think that it's stupid to do a lot of weight in a Good Morning. So if you're not going to do a lot of weight, you might as well do a hyperextension. Too much redundancy between the hyperextension and the Good Morning. So choose one. I just think, to me, I look at it through the lens of stress management, right? Because programming is an exercise in stress management. So how can I manage my stress inputs? So hyperextension and then a lot of dumbbell upper body work, dumbbell pressing, a lot of dumbbell rowing. I do a lot of band work for the upper back, face pulls, pull aparts, presses with the band. You know, with the band tension pulling you forward. I do a lot of high volume 50 reps for the upper back. Do a lot of upper back supplemental work. Heavy dumbbell rowing. They call it croc row. So, you know, you're holding on to something with one hand and you're at about a 45 degree angle and you're cheating. Like you should be able to do for a male, you know, middleweight, 150, 160 pound dumbbell. Now, I think it's great for the grip too. And that's it. You know, those are the exercises that I use for my advanced athletes. I'll add conditioning with Prowler and things like that. Oh, pressing. I don't do a lot of overhead squatting. I don't think it's that useful unless it's a confidence builder. See that with CrossFit, you know, you had these people with these crazy overhead squats and they couldn't snatch to save their life. So I'm like, well, I don't know how big of a relation. And for me, in my my training, we only overhead squatted as part of a complex. So the most that we would ever do would be about 70%. So I just don't see the value in overhead squats as much unless you want to build. I've used it in the past as a confidence thing, but I will have my athletes be still. So when they catch snatch or anything overhead, I require them to be still. I don't want to see anything moving. So they'll pause and be still in the jerk, anything overhead in the jerk, even in their presses, right? We practice not just going through the range. It's get their hold control and then back down. So they're mindful about those ending positions. I drill that when they're young, but even with my advanced athletes, that's the expectation because I think it gets a little bit more strengthening of the shoulders by having an isometric tension, you know, for a couple of seconds. So I get, you know, you're kind of getting a little bit more development in between the cracks, in between the notes. So, but I really, that's a big focus with my elite athletes as well.
Would you do any athlete monitoring? You mentioned a little bit that with novice, older athletes, you like them to monitor a few variables in terms of their sleep and heart rate. Do you do the same for your advanced lifters?
My young athletes, I want to make sure that they're sleeping and eating. It's really the most important things. And I talk to them about how to organize their life because they don't know how to organize their life. You know, do they have a car? Like if they're old enough to drive, does your car work all the time? You know, because if you can't get to training, then you can't train. You know, do you have reliable transportation to training? You know, talk to them about how to organize their life. If they have to shop for themselves, what do you buy? How do you cook? I teach athletes how to cook, the young ones. The elite athletes, if I have to teach them that, I don't want to coach them. I just don't. Like if you can't get your shit together outside of training, you're not an elite athlete. So I don't spend time on that. If you can't do that, then go somewhere else. I'm not going to beg somebody to eat and to sleep and to, you know, do all these things that you need to do. The 21 hours that you're outside of the gym every day, you better be able to manage that. I don't get into that with them. You know, I encourage them to seek out a nutrition person. I have my resources that I'm very happy to share my athletes with other practitioners. You know, I'm not like, you need to be just doing what I tell you to do. So, and I need them to take care. I just need them to take care of themselves because I need to know that what I'm seeing, your performance on any given day is a result of what I'm putting on the paper, not because you have bad habits, because that adds a variable that I can't control. I mean, I can't control that. So I need to know, like, when I write something for my athlete, I know how they're supposed to look. And if they don't look that way, the first thing I do is what's going on? And if nothing's going on out of the ordinary, then I look into my side. I say, okay, what am I doing wrong?
Do you do comparison for heart rate variability, for example, with your...
Not for the young ones. I don't do that with them. I don't do any of that stuff with them. I don't care. They're not doing anything that's going to negatively affect their heart rate variability. If they are, then I'm screwing up. I just want them to eat and sleep. And you laugh, right? But you think, oh, it's not. It's the hardest thing to do. I can't get my high school guys to sleep and eat. I can't do it. There's nothing I can do. Some of them do fine, but for the most part, it's like trying to herd cats. It is just, I got 80 kids, 80 high school football players. It is madness. Weightlifting's different, right? You don't have 80 kids. And then you have to get the parents involved if they're young enough, because they don't know, to tell them what you expect, like what you need from them. I think as they're like, when they're 15, 16, you can't have that conversation with the parents. The kids will resent you for that. They're old enough, right? They got it, you know, they're working, you know, they can buy their own food or at least supplement what their parents are giving them. And I tell them that too. I was like, look, you know, you're going to eat a lot more than you were eating. You know, you got to give your parents a break, especially if they're not, you know, they're not wealthy. You know, generally, you're not going to get wealthy kids that want to do weightlifting, but it's too hard. But, you know, talked about getting a job. I think it's important to work, to get a job or go to school, work, you know, but make sure the job doesn't interfere with your training or keep you up at night. So these are you have to kind of teach them all this because they don't know. Because, you want them to act like an elite level athlete, but they're not. But they can't just do whatever. And also you're setting them up for later, right? When they're an adult. So it's got to be about development, you know, for later. And these are all the things that you have to pay attention to.
Anything about technique, strength development in elite athletes, anything else coaches should be aware of? Well, I guess what I'm hearing is you try something and you observe what's happening, what is the outcome, and then immediately adjust. That's your approach.
Yeah, it's scientific, right? It's the scientific method. It's not just for research, you know, it's for everything.
True.
Right. So, you know, that was a huge, when I learned about the scientific method in college, it had a pretty profound effect on me. I'm like, okay, well, there's a process for this. You know, there's a repeatable process within the chaos, right? So it's not just chaos. There's something there. There's a framework in order to be able to navigate that. So that's why it can't be rigid. You know, it's like, here's 4 years of training, follow it. It doesn't work that way. If you look at my programming for my elite athletes, from the surface, they look similar. So I take the unilateral approach and all that. But if you get into the details, it's different. If you count, start measuring like the intensity, like the volume, right? The amount of reps, the amount of weight lifted. You know, all that stuff is very, it can be very different depending upon the athlete, the size of the athlete, the age of the athlete, you know, all these things go into the details of, you know, when you count those numbers, that's why they're different. But the structure of the training is going to be very similar for the elite athletes. It's just the devil's in the details, right? It's in the amount and how you allocate that stress, depending upon, you know, what they need, where their weakness is. So that's where the big differences are going to be. It's important to really spend some time with your contemplating what you're doing with your elite athletes and making sure that, you know, especially like you're out of the gym, it's quiet. It's, you know, it's a peaceful, everything is, I live by myself, so I have the ability to do that. But I think it's important. Well, it's like in the scientific method, right? Like you have to evaluate what you're doing. Are you measuring what you want to measure, right? All that stuff. So those are the questions that you have to ask.
I have one more question from the Patreon community I wanted to add, and then we can slowly wrap up. I don't have context for this question, so you're free to take it as you wish. The question is, what are your go-to variations for intermediate and advanced athletes?
Variations with exercise or...
That's all I have in terms of this question, but yeah, let's take exercises first, and then we mostly covered this topic through the conversation. So just to sum up, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, with athletes in the middle of their journey, so they're not beginners, so they have some concept of what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it. They're still inconsistent, you know, in some ways. I think the differences are what you would expect. I think as they develop, they need more stress, right, in order to create, you know, continue to to create the adaptation. So I think they need, you know, I think that if you look at the ratio of where their training is allocated, I think you're going to start to see more allocation towards the technical lifts, a little bit less maybe in the strength lifts, or at least a reduction maybe in intensity. You have these inverse relationship as you develop, right? So volume intensity, you know, is an inverse relationship. So I think that as we get towards the middle, right, we start to see, you know, some decreases in volume and some increases in intensity, you know, from a high level. I think that's, but I think the structure of the training, you know, because you're going to have more volume, you're going to have more exercise, you know, you might have more exercises that you, so I think as a young developing athlete, you have less exercises that you're identifying with a percentage, you know, so I think that as they become intermediate athletes, I think you're going to have more exercises that are, you're going to allocate a percentage to, so you can better monitor the stress on it. So I think that you're going to have more of those exercises in your training as opposed to, you know, a young athlete. I think the middle athlete's going to have more technical work, like I said, more snatch and clean and jerk variations and snatch and clean and jerk itself. They're probably going to train more days a week. So that's another way to increase volume, is just increase frequency, right? So young athlete, maybe, you know, real young, maybe it's twice or three times a week. Middle athlete's probably, you know, closer to 4 or 5 days a week. As a young athlete, you want them to compete, you know, maybe up to six times a year, 4 to 6 times a year. You know, as an intermediate athlete, you know, you're probably going to compete 4 times a year, because I think they're going to need, you need more recovery, because, you know, if you're increasing the intensity, you know, the volume isn't low, it's just lower. You have to put in recovery there, because they're at the point, because they're lifting enough weight for them to need the recovery. At the young age, they don't need recovery. The metabolisms are nuts. So that's another big, I think that's another substantial difference. And I think by that time, you know, you're going to know what kind of athlete they're going to be. Are they doing the things they need to do outside? So I think that you'll see the ones that stay generally are the ones that are all buttoned up outside of the gym. So I think that's a big difference as well. You know, they understand what it's like to be an athlete, what they need to do to be an athlete. I think those are the big strokes for that.
And you think in exercise selection, you mentioned a little bit that you use maybe overhead squat a little bit less, and you introduce some other squat variations with your advanced athlete. Anything that pulls? What do you do? Pulls? Do you use
pulls? I do pulls with my young athletes. I do, and my middle athletes, we do, you know, high pull or extension or, you know, things like that. It's not that I don't do them with my elite athlete. I just do them less. I do them less. But yeah, I do all those for my beginning and middle athletes. You know, all the I have a list of all the exercises. I think it's like 132 exercises, including all the variations, you know, the block, the lift from the block, above the knee, below. So they're all, I think it's like 130 something that I will use, you know. And then, you know, I'm not going to use all of them for everybody, those are the exercises that I'll, the pool of exercises that I'll choose from.
Would you have any advice on, because around that time that plateaus start to happen, so the beginners stop being beginners and they don't have newbie gain. Would you have any framework how you go about unlocking the athletes around this time?
When an athlete hits that moment is telling on their ceiling. So for instance, after the first 6 years, if you are just being able to qualify, like you just, you know, you have a good meet and you qualify for nationals, that's who you are. Like you're not going to the Olympics. You know? So that first 6 year period of development is really important, because that's when you stop making those monumental gains, like 50% increase in total, right? From year to year, which happens in the first couple of years, you know, you get that. So it's a race to get as far as you can in that first. If the lighter weight classes will have a longer runway, maybe 8 years. No, I'm sorry. The larger weight classes will have a little bit of a longer runway because they develop
more slow.
So you can't screw that first 6 or so years up, because if they're making technical errors at 6 years, you know, you're really going to lower their ceiling of how good they're going to be. You got to really pay attention. You can't make mistakes early on.
If you have lived there around 5 years of experience, they are stuck on the same numbers. How?
Yeah. If they get stuck at 6 years and not improving, they're not very good, or you're not very good as a coach. So if improvement stops, they're either not talented or you suck as a coach. It's going to decline. The magnitude of improvement is going to decline at that, around that time, but they still should be improving, just not at the magnitude that they did, 4 years prior. So that's why it's important that you get high, you get that total as high as you can within reason, because after that 6 or so years, the improvements, no matter how talented you are not going to come in these great chunks anymore. Now, you can continue to improve for 10 or so years. Don't get me wrong, you can, but it's not going to be 15, 20% year over year. It's just not going to happen. So, but what happens if they do stop and it's your fault? Why? Like, are they just slow? Maybe your average intensity is too high, right? Is there snatch, is there clean and jerk way ahead of their snatch at that point, right? What's the problem? Do they have mobility? Are their ankles tight? Are their shoulder issue? Are you training them too heavy? So they're just not developing, speed, So I think that at that point in time, if they're stopping improvement, you have to start to evaluate, obviously, you'll know if they're talented or not, like you can tell. And if they are talented and their progress is really slowing, then you have to look at what you're doing with them. You have to change something, because talented athletes shouldn't stop developing. They'll slow down, but they shouldn't stop, especially 6 years.
Okay, two short questions to finish. What is your favorite color?
It's changed. So, when I grew up in New York, the energy of New York, and I lived in LA, I was in New York for 24 years and in LA for about 24 years. And now I'm in Utah, which is a different universe. Back then, I loved harsh. I like black and red, like deep red. Still like it, but I have a closet full of these t-shirts. It's the only t-shirts I have is black t-shirt. It's just more out of one less thing I have to think about. But now that I'm in Utah, it's beautiful, like muted greens and browns, and so I live by a mountain. My backyard is a mountain. So now my favorite colors are these like muted greens and browns and muted reds.
The last question is where people can find you if they want to see what you're doing, what you're up to, or they want to contact you with some questions.
So right now the best way to get me is on Instagram, VTHE_Sean_Waxman. I have a website, SeanWaxman.com, waxmansgym.com. It's just a placeholder site right now. I'm in the middle of kind of redoing all that. I have a book coming out, nothing to do with weightlifting the sport.
Oh.
I got this book coming out called Suffer Smarter. It's basically a book on how to use discomfort to create like a productive life. And I talk about through the lens of the barbell, but it's not a book on weightlifting. It's a book on how to get your I'm writing another book. I just got my last blurb for the book today. So I'm hoping it comes out by the end of the month, but I don't know. My next book is going to be a book on football, high school strength and conditioning, and then it's the weightlifting book.
All right.
And I'm not going to write the same weightlifting book. The weightlifting book I want to write, there's going to be about 10 people in the world that are going to understand it and want to read it. That's the book. I'm not going to make any money on it, but that's the book that I want to write for weightlifting. You can find out all that's going on. I post every day, 5 days a week, on either weightlifting, high school strength and conditioning, or like my own old man journey to gaining my vitality back. So I'll post about one of those three things from Monday through Friday. So VSean_Waxman, but Instagram will be the best place to get me.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sean. That was my pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed this.